I can't seem to raise our guest, Aidan Sinnott from World Vision. So David Moore of Astronomy Ireland has kindly, very reluctant of him, very reluctant of him to talk for longer on matters to do with astronomy. But look, I twisted his arm and he's agreed to do it. So you're very welcome back to CRKC. And it's always, we are proud to be the only radio station in Ireland with a dedicated astronomy slot. And now this week, we're looking back at the truly historic achievement. We looked at part of it last week, the successful completion of the Artemis 2 mission, humanity's return to deep space around the moon for the first time over 50 years. To break it all down and to guide us through what it means and what we can see in our skies right now, I'm joined once again by David Moore, editor of Astronomy Ireland. David, you are so welcome to the programme.
Thank you very much, Eugene. Always glad to help.
And I hope your arm, I hope I didn't twist it too much there to get you to stay on for a little longer this evening.
Don't get me started. You'll never shut me up.
Now, David, the BBC documentary Artemis to the Moon and Back tells the inside story of the Artemis 2 mission, the first time humans have travelled around the moon since the Apollo era. Tell us a little bit about that documentary, because coveted access to astronauts and everything, didn't they, for this documentary?
Yes, we're able to email out details about it to our members last week. We'll be re-emailing people on Wednesday. So if you're not already a member, do join Astronomy On. You don't want to miss out on these things. But the BBC had been filming with NASA for 3.5 years, along with their American counterparts. It's the BBC Horizons program. People may know NOVA in the US, but more or less the same. But they tend to do the highest quality scientific documentaries there are. And so they covered everything from the Artemis 1 mission, which was 3.5 years ago now, and how that was delayed, or the problems they had, the heat shield problems, and then on to Artemis 2, the highly successful one, just ended, 10 days ago, and managed to squeeze in some last-minute footage showing those incredible pictures they took, and, you know, one-on-one interviews with the astronauts. There were actually two press conferences last week since we spoke, where NASA introduced the crew and let the media ask them questions. And so it's been Artemis week, and we ourselves are getting in on the act because we're going to set up telescopes ourselves later in May to show people what the Artemis astronauts saw. I'll tell you a bit more about that.
Later, the documentaries,
that's the main one. Then the Sky at Night BBC4's monthly program also covered Artemis. Now, they had pre-recorded that show, but they had a bit at the end there about the latest results as well. So it's been Artemis week.
Now, on that documentary, the four astronauts, Reid Wiseman, Victor Glover, Christine Koch, and Jeremy Hansen, they had access to these astronauts as well over the course of that documentary as well, hadn't they?
Yeah, they filmed doing their training, asking them for their opinions on the mission, talking to them about the heat shield, which had sort of technically failed on the Artemis 1 mission, and NASA couldn't really redesign it because that would take too long. So they tweaked it in a way. Turns out they did exactly the right thing and it worked. It worked great this time. But there was a report produced a long time after the Artemis 1 mission landed saying that it would probably be a mistake to put people's lives at risk with this particular heat shield. But that just means make sure you fix it, which they did. But it was insights like that. And the astronauts themselves, and of course they refer back to the Apollo missions. The thing that struck me about the Apollo missions was that they cost about $300 billion in today's money. I think NASA's doing all this for about $10 billion. So, you know, things have moved on. Now there's lots of rockets around. It's not as difficult. It's still very expensive. It costs $1 million a kilo to send something to the moon. So, you know, if you're an astronaut weighing 70 kilos, perhaps, it costs $70 million to send you there. And any equipment you've got has to be carefully considered when there are costs like that. But the astronauts for Apollo had a 10 to 15% chance of not coming back. So things have moved. You wouldn't be allowed to do that in today's world of modern health and safety. So things have to be really safe this time round. And it's all about putting this in the context of how, you know, there's a new space race. This one is on for the moon racing the Chinese. Whoever gets to the South Pole will get the prime territory, the best territory there is. And so America doesn't want to be left behind by the Chinese. And the Chinese have said they're going to land 2030. The Americans are hoping for late 2028. It's going to be very interesting to watch this over the next 2 years.
And just in relation to Artemis II, David, it's like the ad, if Carlsberg did space missions, this would probably be the best, because nothing really went wrong at all except the toilet.
Yeah, and even then, it was sort of the septic tank, if you like, rather than the toilet that went wrong. Reed Wiseman, the commander, said the toilet worked great. The problem was venting the stuff overboard that they get rid of. That seems to have frozen up, or maybe had a chemical problem and got it stuck, and that part didn't work. But in terms of using the toilet, that went fine. The problem was basically flushing it afterwards. And this was NASA's most important mission in half a century, and it went so smoothly. You know, the powers that be are going to be dead chuffed with this one, and hoping they'll repeat that for Artemis 3 next year, probably around summer, and Artemis 4 when they land people on the moon at the end of 2028. So fingers crossed that's exactly what's happened. We see people back on the moon for good this time, not just to beat the Soviets in a race of technology that happened in the 60s and 70s with the Apollo missions. Set up a moon base, and they talked a bit about, you know, all the money that's going there to be made with rare earth metals, which are in your smartphones. There's a shortage of those in the world, and there'll be no more smartphones if we don't find other sources. So it's billions of dollars that industry is looking at on the moon. It's going to be hard to stop them going back to the moon with dollar bill signs that big. So there's science, there's commerce, there's establishing a lunar economy. This is what's going to happen. It's a really exciting time for young people, I think, because they're going to live this. Some of them may even end up working on the moon. That's how big the plans are.
And certainly this mission, David, the seamless way the mission went from start to finish, this definitely puts them in the driving seat ahead of some of the other countries, doesn't it, for landing on the moon?
Yeah, but that said, right now as we speak, there's seven people on board the International Space Station, but there are three Chinese on the Chinese space station in orbit right now. They've landed rovers on the far side of the moon, the Chinese have. The Chinese have definitely got a target and a proven track record. They have a manned space program. They don't need the public support like NASA does, so they don't tend to go on too much about it. It's obviously a great prestige for them, and they do publicize it that way. But they're not worried about taxpayers complaining about where their money is going, as NASA and Congress have to worry about. So it's going to be a very interesting space of two really very different types of society, and who will succeed. And NASA keeps saying this is just the staging post for Mars. That's where their real target is. So, you know, we're hoping to have a permanent moon base inhabited permanently by about 2033. And NASA's new administrator, Jared Isaacman, is gung-ho about getting things done quickly. He didn't want to get rid of safety, but, you know, they don't want to be filling out forms when something goes wrong ad nauseum. Just get it fixed and move on as quickly as possible. So if anyone can get it done in the short term, it does seem like him. He definitely seems to be a good pick. I mean, we're at the dawn of a new space age, and it could be someone like him that ushers it in.
We probably could do with him in this country to get rid of some red tape in so many areas. But anyway, then in the documentary as well, the BBC, not only did they have unfettered access to astronauts, but they had access to a vast network of engineers, technicians, and mission control teams required to make such a mission possible. I mean, that really sets it up for being a major documentary that everyone should look at.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, if you've got access to BBC iPlayer, then watch it. It's called Artemis to the Moon and Back, and I'm sure it'll be on their player for a long time to come. If you're a member of Astronomy On, we'll be emailing you a link that works whether or not you have access to the iPlayer. You can actually have to download and save the program, which is what I've done. I will probably watch it again. Some of the imagery was superb. And, of course, you know, those interviews that you don't see when you're watching all the coverage live that was happening during the mission itself really round out what it is, really making science fiction a reality today. You know, you get things like the entire rocket weighs over 2.5 million kilograms, 2,500 tons. That's probably 2,000 family cars, to give you some idea. And most of that is fuel. Of the 2.6 it is, 2.3 are fuel in terms of millions of kilograms. So it's they talk about the hydrogen, which is extremely explosive. You may remember the Hindenburg disaster, start of the 20th century, wasn't it?
That's right.
That was full of hydrogen, and look what happened to it. So they have to be extremely careful with all this hydrogen. You're sitting on basically the top of a very big bomb if you're an astronaut going to the moon, and you have to trust that all the technology is going to work well. I don't know the exact statistic for the SLS rocket, but it would be very similar to the Apollo Saturn V, which could pump out an Olympic swimming pool full of fuel in 20 seconds. I mean, imagine emptying a pool that quick. And this is explosive fuel that drives the thing. The engineering is just off the scale. Whatever your engineers and your contractors do to build this rocket for you, they go out into industry and then do commercial projects. And with something like that under the belt, it's what made America the technological nation that it is. Having people in their industry that can do things like this.
And again, in that documentary, they also captured key moments of the Artemis II journey, the launch and build up to the mission, the lunar flyby, including amazing views of the moon's far side. I mean, for visuals alone, I'm sure it's absolutely stunning. I haven't seen it myself, but I've got a kind of taste of what it's about. But I believe the imagery is absolutely stunning.
Yeah, I mean, I did send you the link yesterday, so I do have a look at it online. It's worth it, or if you record it, sit down with a big bag of popcorn and enjoy yourself. Mm. But the next issue of Astronomy On magazine will feature the pictures. It'll be the front cover story, hardly a big giveaway. That should be out next week. And there'll probably be other pictures released, because they took thousands of them. And as the scientists pour over them, they'll release more and more. We'll cover all those in the future as well. And then you'll have a permanent record of those pictures. I mean, the first total eclipse of the sun seen by astronauts going around the moon. The Apollo missions didn't get eclipses. Everything was designed to keep them in the sunlight for power reasons. And they were very close to the surface of the moon, ready to go down and come back up. Whereas the Artemis mission, being a test mission, deliberately went 4,000 miles beyond the moon so they could look back and see the whole globe. So they've got the Earth setting over the moon. They've got the eclipse pictures. And they've got other pictures they took, and of course the incredible numbers of craters that you can see when you're in a spacecraft with a big telephoto lens looking down on the moon's surface.
Okay, you stay exactly where you are, David. We're going to take an ad break here just to pay the bills here, and we'll be back after these.
Right. You're listening to Kilkenny Today, bringing you the news you can trust on Kilkenny Today.
And you're welcome back to the programme. And I still have David Moore, from editor of Astronomy Ireland, on the line. David, just back to that Artemis story. Just the documentary also looks, there's a major theme of it, is the personal side of space travel, the emotional pressures on astronauts and their families. And it leans heavily into how exploration is not just scientific, but deeply human as well, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, manned spaceflight's a lot more expensive than robotic. People often wonder, especially the researchers, who would not get the funding for robotic spacecraft that manned spacecraft can bring. So there was a big push on the science team to use the astronauts to train them how to be scientists and to report back what they're seeing and take lots of pictures of it. And that was a big piece of it. And of course, the astronauts, three of them, have families, one of whom lost his spouse during the training for the mission. And they named a crater after him, Carol. Safe to say there wasn't a dry eye in the house being the entire planet, when they announced this while they were in space. But, you know, the astronauts are risking their lives. It's a very dangerous mission they had. They traveled 1 million kilometers. It went deeper into space than any humans ever have. And then they came back and in a fireball at 32 times the speed of sound, with temperatures of nearly 3,000 degrees Celsius a few feet away from them outside their craft, as their heat shield was hopefully, unfortunately, doing its thing. And that was 6 minutes of terror when There was no communication because those extreme temperatures generate plasma that blocks radio waves. And when Reid Wiseman came back on the radio and said they were safe, everybody breathed a sigh of relief, especially after the Artemis 1 heat shield issues that they'd had. That was the only time I think I personally was overly worried, because even if anything happens on launch, they have a good chance of being able to escape in a special rocket system they have that pulls the crew away from the exploding rocket. So, it's a human story. Humans have been this far, seen things humans have never seen before, even on the Apollo missions, and it's all in that documentary.
And another question, David, in relation to, the space shuttle. The space shuttles were something that we could all identify with, like it's like a plane. It goes somewhere and comes back and lands. And obviously you did it successfully on many occasions, but obviously we had some terrible accidents and terrible loss of life. Do you ever see a shuttle coming back into the picture at any stage?
Probably not, because if you look at the way NASA and the space industry is going, NASA is contracting out as much as it can to private companies. The idea is not to do everything itself with public money, but to get a robust commercial space business going. And Jeff Bezos of Amazon fame, and Elon Musk, of course, of SpaceX, Tesla, and everything else, they both have their own space companies, and they're both contracted to build the craft that's going to land on the moon when Artemis 4 goes up. And Artemis 3 could take both of their prototypes up with it to test the two of them, and then NASA will presumably pick one, or maybe they'll send one on one mission, one on the next mission, to go down to the surface. So it's all now about doing it commercially, or trying to do it commercially. Big change from what happened in the 60s and 70s.
Okay. Now, coming back then to what you mentioned earlier, the Artemis Moonwatch. You're marking this milestone with a special Artemis Moonwatch on May the 20th. Tell us what's planned for that night.
Yeah, we were watching the pictures of the moon live on air and thinking, that's very nice. I can actually see more detail through my telescope than that. And that's what we're going to do. We're going to invite the general public to look through telescopes that will get them closer than the astronauts going around them. Closest they got to the moon was 4,000 miles. Our telescopes can get us down to less than 1,000 miles equivalent. Now, admittedly, they had a telephoto lens on their camera, which acts like a telescope, and they could get closer that way. But in terms of looking out the window that the Artemis crew did, you'll get a better view looking into Astronomy Ireland's telescopes, so we thought we have to do a moonwatch, seeing how impressive this particular mission was. So people won't have to travel a million kilometres into space, they won't have to come back in a fireball at 30 times the speed of sound, they can enjoy a cup of coffee and a biscuit while looking into powerful telescopes. And we're going to set them up on the 20th of May, exactly 1 week before our next set of evening classes begin. And not only that, Jupiter will be close to the moon in the sky that night, and its great red spot is on view. So it's a perfect confluence of all these celestial wonders to show people in telescopes. So if people want to book tickets for that, we're putting up the web page today. It should be there by tomorrow. Just go to astronomy.ie, bring the whole family, and see the kind of view the Artemis astronauts have had. I've been lucky to look through giant telescopes. The detail is incredible. I could appreciate what the astronauts were seeing out the window, because I've seen through telescopes for decades. And these are really powerful telescopes that give razor-sharp images, just like the view you would have had out the window if you were there. So May the 20th, 9 p.m. as the sun sets. For about an hour or two, we'll be there with giant telescopes. Go to astronomy.ie and join in the fun. Bring everyone you know, the entire family, all your friends, and we'll amaze them with the views through the telescopes.
And, of course, that will be it'll be a pretty late one, because obviously by the 20th of May, we're talking about darkness maybe around half 10. Are we in or 10 or half 10? That's what we're talking about, really, isn't
it? Well, it's the moon. So once the sun sets, it's dark enough. I actually saw the moon earlier today in broad daylight with the sun shining in my face. So you can see the moon in daylight. It's a bit washed out in a telescope in broad daylight. But once the sun gets low, and definitely when it sets, and 9 p.m. is sunset, so we'll be getting glorious views from then for at least an hour or two. The moon will be up for several hours. But, we want people to come along at 9, get the view when it's highest up, when you can see Jupiter as well, The red spot won't hang around for too long on Jupiter, maybe an hour or so. So if we can pack everything into 9 to 10, we'll have at least a half a dozen giant telescopes there to wow people. So 9 p.m. sunset, May the 20th, go to astronomy.ie.
And we'll come back to that before the time as well to talk about it before coming up to the time. David, just in relation to Artemis II and the successful mission that it conducted over 10 days, do you sense that there's a renewed excitement, interest in astronomy and that? Do you sense that people are getting excited about this new era of space travel?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, it's a whole new space age that we're beginning here. And this time, it's the one, you know, you've seen in all the science fiction movies where people live and work in space. You know, they do that a little bit on the International Space Station, but now the pace is to really accelerate that, and a moon base would make a huge difference. The International Space Station is only funded till 2030, so we've got 4 years or so of it. After that, it gets decommissioned, and it's gone. So the question is, do you build another one? And in fact, they're going to leave that to the commercial enterprises. And NASA wants to build a moon base to have the permanent mission in space. And they keep saying that this is just a stepping stone to Mars. And Elon Musk, Jeff Bezos, both private individuals with their own space companies, they've said publicly they are going to put 1 million people on Mars by the end of this century. That's a total game changer. There have been less than 1,000 people in space to date since Yuri Gagarin went up in the 1960s. So to have 1 million on Mars, goodness knows how many on the moon, and goodness knows how many in space working on space stations, and all the millions of people that will be working on the ground to support all those people out there in space, it's going to be a huge business. Space is already roughly $1 trillion a year industry, and it's set to grow. And this is where it really starts now.
Now, turning to a couple of events this week, to the night sky, Venus is passing the Pleiades cluster. Why is this such a special event, and how often does it happen, David?
Yeah, Venus has only just come back into the evening sky, and it's about 100 times brighter than the brightest star in the sky. So you've been driving along and at dusk, and you've seen an extremely bright star ahead of you in the west. That's Venus. It's going to get slowly higher over the next few weeks. Last night, it was just below the moon, a beautiful sight. And in fact, if you were looking at the moon, you read the Astronomy Island magazine, you'll know that the Seven Sisters star cluster was just below it. I could barely see those with a naked eye, but the view in binoculars was amazing. And we've already got some superb pictures in. Photographs actually show the dark side of the moon glowing because the sunlight reflected off the Earth onto the crescent moon. So if you look at the moon tonight, excuse me, if it's clear, you'll see that Venus is to the lower right of the moon. And if you look at with your binoculars, you'll see that just above Venus is the Seven Sisters star cluster. And only once every 8 years do they pass close to each other. Okay. And the next 6 days is the time to see it. Thursday night, they're closest. It's all in Astronomy Island magazine. Do check it out every night.
Okay, and then there's also a striking close approach between Jupiter and the Moon. What would that look like for people watching from Ireland, David?
Yeah, and the Moon will be high up by Wednesday night, very high up where Jupiter is, and you'll see that just at the lower left of the Moon is this brilliant star. That's the planet Jupiter. They actually get very close. If you held your thumb up at arm's length, you'd only just squeeze your thumb between Jupiter and the Moon. And that's similar to what's going to happen on May the 20th when we're running the Artemis Moon Watch. So if you have a telescope, you could actually fit the Moon and Jupiter in the same field of view. See, craters on the Moon and the cloud belts on Jupiter with its own moons going around it. That's an amazing sight, very rare indeed. So there's lots of details about that in the latest Astronomy Island magazine. By the way, if you join the Society, you're instantly emailed what to see in the sky. Those pages are sent digitally, and then the paper copy comes in the post after that. So you'll have it in time for Wednesday night for sure.
And David, finally, 20 seconds I have only left. Comet Pan-STARRS has been spotted in the Irish skies. How rare is it for us to see that?
Yeah, we only get bright comets once every year or two, if we're lucky. And this was only just faintly visible with naked eye. I couldn't see with naked eye. People in other countries could. But it made superb photographs. And Anthony Lynch, a well-known astrophotographer, got a superb photograph that's, it would have made the front cover if it weren't for all the Artemis news, that, but it will be on the inside of the magazine. And that comet's now gone. It's gone. It's not visible with Marlin anymore. But others will come.
Okay. Look, we leave it there. That's David Moore, editor of Astronomy Ireland magazine. For more details on that Artemis Moonwatch on May the 20th event and everything happening in our skies, you can visit Astronomy Ireland's website, astronomy.ie. And stay tuned to CRKC and don't forget to take a moment to look up. Thanks a million, David, for your time. And we'll talk to you again next week.
My pleasure.
Okay, thank you.